This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
You are listening to the first 2016 episode of the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Once again, as always, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. And don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or through your podcast manager of choice. You can also listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto and listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please rate the podcast on iTunes and tell a friend. The more listeners we have, the more episodes we can get out. And obviously, I'm really grateful for all of your support through 2015, where we really expanded the reach of our audience throughout the 2015 season. And we're looking forward to a pretty good 2016 coming out from here. Also, we are also on Facebook. So you can find us at the Unconquered Podcast on Facebook to follow some of the latest on this show, and also to discuss and all of that, in addition to what I do on Twitter. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and get to it. It's been a little while since the last podcast, which we did right before the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, a Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl loss for Florida State, 38-24 to the Houston Cougars, as Florida State wound up with the lose-lose game against the Power 5 opponent and managed to lose-lose, actually losing the game to a very game Houston opponent. And basically, Florida State got beat in all three phases. Even though the defense played well, Florida State ultimately got beat on offense, defense, and special teams in this game. And don't think for an instant that this was because Florida State was not interested in this game. You know, having been at practice before the bowl game and seeing the energy that this team had coming in, this was not a matter of lack of interest or whatever. This was not a flat Florida State team. This was just a Houston team that lined up and beat Florida State, and a Florida State team that had a lot of flaws all year, and Houston found a way to expose those and to exploit them in this game. And Florida State didn't execute well enough, particularly on offense, to win this game. And there's a lot to break down here. We're going to spend a little bit more time on the next episode. I'm still going through a little bit more carefully, going through that game tape now that I'm back from the trip to Atlanta and all these other things. You know, I've had some other things I've had to deal with between then and now. But I'm still going through some of the stuff to get a more comprehensive look, grading what I see from the offense and from the defense here. A couple things just immediately, though, before we get into some of the rest of this podcast, where we're gonna talk about some of the things moving forward. And then again, I'll take a little bit more of a detailed look at this game in our next episode. But a couple things just on the first viewing, on the first immediate stuff that I've graded. And again, I haven't made it through the entire game in terms of a careful grading to this point. But you know, there seems to be on social media this impression that Florida State's offensive line just got manhandled, and that's just not true. This idea that Florida State's offensive line regressed from the performance that they put up at the end of the season against the University of Florida. And again, I don't think that's true. I think this was actually a very similar, very comparable performance from the Florida State offensive line, and really from the Florida State offense, to what they did against Florida. Now, Florida's defense is obviously better than Houston's. But given the nature of how banged up Florida's defense was at the end of the season there, where they, you know, there were a number of guys that were a MASH unit on their defensive line, and they were, you know, band-aids at linebacker. This Houston defense was completely healthy, and you know, honestly, the difference between what I saw from Houston and what I saw from Florida in terms of what they could bring up front and what they were able to do was not all that different. Yes, the Florida defense was better, But we're talking about margins here. This was a really good Houston defense. We knew that going in. We talked about that on the preview, that this was a very good Houston defense and that Florida State would have to play well to beat this Houston team. So, I don't think that this was a matter of this was, as I talked about in the preview, this was not Northern Illinois in terms of talent on defense. Houston had some talent. They had some things that Florida State could exploit, but they had some talent and they were, and Florida State needed to be able to treat them like a Florida defense because they were going to load up against the run. Florida State needed to be able to block them and do all that. And they didn't. And at the end of the day, what we talked about on that preview podcast, as you'll recall, I said Florida State's probably going to have to turn it over four times to lose this game. It's a bad matchup for Houston's offense against Florida State's defense, and FSU's going to have the edge in terms of talent enough that Florida State's going to have to turn it over four times probably to lose this game. Well, Florida State had four turnovers in, you know, non-garbage time, I would say. You know, obviously they had five total with McGuire's final interception as FSU was sort of in desperation mode at the end there. But they had four key turnovers that ultimately, I think, decided the game more than anything else, or at least as much as anything else. I would say more. So the four turnovers, you know, we talked about keys to this game. Florida State needed to capitalize on their scoring opportunities, make sure that Houston didn't capitalize on their trips inside the 40. And Florida State needed to not turn it over three times. You know, they needed to make sure that they kept their turnover numbers under four. And of course, going in, you know, you felt confident that Florida State would be able to do that. It's a team that had turned the ball over 10 times the entire season. And they turned it over five against Houston. And, you know, if you'd have told me and told anybody before this game that FSU had turned it over five times, then I would have said Houston probably wins the game. And it would be close. And this was a close game. Obviously, Houston scored to go up 14 at the end there. That was a situation where, you know, I think it made it look a little bit less close than the game actually was. But basically, this was what you would expect in a performance where Florida State turned it over four times. Now, again, a lot of people on social media and so on have been looking at the offensive line, and they've been pointing at the offensive line, and they've been saying, well, it's because of pressure on the quarterback that they threw all those interceptions. It's because they couldn't run the ball that they threw all those interceptions. They regressed from what happened against Florida. Guys, that's, you got to think through what actually happened against Florida. You got to look at the actual context of those turnovers. And that stuff is not really the case. If you look at what happened against Florida, Florida State did not run the football all that well through three quarters against Florida. That's pretty normal when you're going against a quality defense that loads the box. And when I've gone back through and taking a look at and grading what I'm actually seeing on the tape, you look at Houston, there are times where I'm counting 10 guys within about 8 yards of the line of scrimmage loading up to stop the run. As soon as they see the run, they're all coming downhill. And what Houston did a great job of is setting the edge so that they could clog on the interior. They did a great job of using numbers to keep Dalvin Cook and the Florida State running game from being able to get the edge so that they could force into help and basically use their good run fits on the inside to be able to limit what Cook was able to do. And by bringing those safeties up, and they had those safeties up all game, they basically said, you're not going to be able to, even if you do get through the line of scrimmage there, we're going to have a guy right there to make the tackle. You're not going to be able to get those explosive plays from Dalvin Cook at this point in the game. You're going to have to prove that you can beat us downfield consistently for us to loosen that up. And that's really what Florida did. And Florida had success with that as well early on. I mean, this is standard offensive football that a lot of people don't understand. They look at teams like Alabama and they say Alabama can run the ball against anybody. Well, you didn't watch the Sugar Bowl or the Cotton Bowl. Sorry, it's another game played indoors. You didn't watch the Cotton Bowl, did you? Because Michigan State absolutely bottled up that Alabama running game through really three quarters. But see, this is the way that the running game works, is you're going to get a lot of 1 and 2 and 3 yard carries, and you're going to be just kind of punching along against a good defense until finally you're able to use the passing game to open some things up. You're able to get that defense a little bit tired, get them off balance, and that's when the running game happens in the fourth quarter or at different points. You can get an explosion play, and that's when that stuff happens. So you think about it, against Florida, Dalvin Cook had 11 carries for 28 yards against Florida before the second really big pass play, that one to Kermit Whitfield that went down the field. 11 carries for 28 yards until that second big pass play, and then they had 15 carries. Dalvin Cook had 15 carries for 157 yards. That's 10 yards a carry after that. So he went from 2 yards a carry to 10 yards a carry. And the dividing line was FSU being able to beat that Florida secondary down the field a little bit on a couple different occasions and do that without turning it over, so that Florida's defense had to take account of that, and all of a sudden Cook had room to run. The same thing happened, you know, Stanford against Iowa. Iowa's got a great defensive line, or a good defensive line. It's a Big Ten West team, let's be honest. There's nothing really great there. But they've got a very good defensive line. They're a team that could have potentially stopped the run against Stanford. Northwestern did. Northwestern stopped Stanford. But what happens is, all of a sudden, you on the first play from scrimmage, you're able to actually get a pass play to McCaffrey down the field, down the seam, and all this for 80 yards, or what was it, 75 yards for a touchdown. And then shortly thereafter, you get another pass play down the field. And all of a sudden, it's a route, because they can't stop the pass down the field. Now they can't load up against the box like they want to against Christian McCaffrey, and suddenly it's a blowout, and Stanford's able to do whatever they want. That's a counter to what happened earlier in the year when Hogan, at the beginning of the year, first game of the year against Northwestern, Stanford quarterback Kevin Hogan couldn't throw the football at all. They were unproductive in the passing game. He threw an interception. They had relatively low number of snaps. Hogan is 20 of 35 for 155 yards. That's 4.4 yards per attempt, which is terrible. Had one interception in that game, and you know they weren't able to throw the football well enough to keep the Northwestern defense honest. And when you start to look at this, look at Christian McCaffrey's rushing numbers against Northwestern. 66 yards rushing against Northwestern. Now, is Northwestern better than Iowa? No, they're not. They're not better than Iowa. But all of a sudden, you have a lost fumble, a lost interception, you got two turnovers, you have the inability to keep the defense honest with the pass, and that Stanford rushing attack with four seniors on the offensive line and Christian McCaffrey in the backfield get bottled up, and you score 6 points. As opposed to, you open the game throwing the football down the field, you create some chances, you get a couple big plays down the field against a better defense in Iowa, and all of a sudden the route is on. Same thing with Alabama. As we talked about, Alabama gets bottled up in the running game, but Jake Coker and Calvin Ridley, 21-year-old freshman Calvin Ridley, make a couple big plays in the passing game, and then all of a sudden the game is a rout. That's how this works. And what Florida State was never really able to do was consistently beat or threaten Houston downfield. They showed that they could. You had some really big plays. I mean, Travis Rudolph had 201 yards receiving. I mean, there were plays that were made down the field. But the thing was, Houston was willing to roll the dice. And we talked about this in the preview. Houston was willing to roll the dice and try to take away the Florida State running game and say, you're going to have to be able to throw consistently against us without turning it over. They were willing to give up some big plays in the passing game in exchange for some potential turnovers, which they got. We're gonna give up some plays, but we're not going to give it up enough for you to beat us if you're going to turn the football over. And the Florida State quarterbacks were unable to make the plays that they needed to make to put Houston on their heels, to force them to play honest defense, and to help the offensive line. I mean, another thing that really came up in this, I mean, we talked about this again. I talked about this the last couple podcast episodes, Florida State's quarterback situation. McGuire looked better in practice than I'd seen him look, but he still in this game showed the limitations that we've seen from him in the past. Now, I'd heard some very good things during bowl prep about some of the steps that he's taken forward as a leader in this with this team that put him in a better position to potentially compete for the job. I'd kind of penciled in DeAndre Francois or Malik Henry as a starter for next year, and I think McGuire will have a decent chance of actually being the starter at this point because of that leadership bit. But this game showed why, really, ultimately, Florida State is going to be better off, more than likely, if Francois or Henry sees that job in the spring and the fall, because there are just simple limitations. You got one-on-one coverage, in some cases zero coverage, no real safety help, and you still wind up with four interceptions with Florida State's wide receivers against Houston's secondary. That should never happen. 22 of 44, not good enough. And part of that was because the Florida State quarterbacks didn't get rid of the football when they needed to. And I think one of the turning points of this game was right after Florida State actually did force a turnover. They forced a turnover, had a key interception of Greg Ward Jr. as a result of some great pressure by Josh Sweat. They're in position to seize control of the game. But this is right after Sean McGuire went out with an injury, with what appeared to be a high ankle sprain. Initially, it looked to me, because I didn't see an inversion sprain. The way that the foot caught in the turf, I thought maybe it was an Achilles injury. But ultimately, McGuire came back, and he had coming back with an Achilles injury. And give McGuire a ton of credit, by the way, for being a warrior and finishing this game. A ton of credit. I mean, the kid fought like heck to actually be on the field. I mean, he was on crutches after the game, clearly uncomfortable, clearly injured, played through that. But the turning point of this game to me was, first of all, when they were down inside the red zone there and he did get hurt and they weren't able to punch the football into the end zone, had to kick a field goal. Then that was followed up with J.J. Cosentino getting the ball back on the Houston side of the field with a chance to seize momentum. And Jimbo Fisher calls the right call. It was, whether it was Fisher or Sanders, I don't know. But Florida State offense it was the right call. And there was some criticism here of, you got your backup quarterback on the field, just turn and hand it to Dalvin Cook. No, against what they showed, you don't turn and hand it to Dalvin Cook. The best thing you can do is take your young quarterback and give him an easy throw that potentially turns into a big play, because they're loaded up. They know it's your backup quarterback. All they're doing, they're going to sell out even more to stop Dalvin Cook. Now's your best chance to take your shot, and they took it. And here's the thing. If J.J. Cosentino hits the back of his drop and he just lets it go, just let it loose up the middle of the field on that post route, it's touchdown. Post was open. We saw how open the post was later. It was not that open, you know, as on the touchdown play that we saw with Sean from Sean McGuire to Travis Rudolph, but it was wide open. And if you watch the Florida Ole Miss game, this is actually a good example. If you watch the Florida Ole Miss game, you can go back to Will Greer's opening his first touchdown throw, which was on a post route against that Ole Miss defense. Greer hit the back of his drop and he just turned it loose and just threw the post route and threw it early and just put air under it and let the receiver go get it. Because basically he knew that the rush was going to get there. He just knew he had to throw on faith and just put the ball out there and let the receiver go get it. This is what Cosentino was supposed to do on this play. Hit the back of your drop. Just make sure that they're not keeping the safety back there, but you know they're probably not going to. So just check that in pre-snap. Then hit the back of your drop and just throw the ball. Just throw it. Let it go. Worst thing that happens is it's a deep punt interception, you know, an arm punt. But more than likely, given what we've seen, it's going to be a wide open post, which it was, and it's a touchdown. Instead, Cosentino hits the back of his drop, hesitates, doesn't throw the football, and gets sacked. Then he gets sacked again. Then he gets sacked again. And as a result, Florida State squanders that chance. They wind up back on, you know, inside their own 30, I think it was. Lost about 35 yards of field position on the basis of these sacks instead of it being an easy touchdown. That, to me, was one of the turning points in the game, one of the reasons that Florida State lost this game. And it's, again, going back to on this podcast, we talked about Florida State's quarterback situation where the drop-off between McGuire, who I've been skeptical of, you know, those of you who've listened to this program know that I've been skeptical about his ceiling. The drop-off from McGuire to Cosentino, we talked about, was gigantic. The Cosentino just doesn't look like he belongs at this point at Florida State as a quarterback prospect. When I watched him in practice, it was one of those things of he just has not taken the step forward that you hope. And this is what we talked about, you know, a few times, that, you know, hearing rumblings from inside the program that he's just not taken the step forward. You can't miss spots the way that he missed spots. And you're talking about stuff that against air, he was missing spots by two or three yards, a yard or two, or sometimes 3 yards. We talked about that again in the pre-Peach Bowl podcasts. Then he gets on the field and he's making the same errant throws, and then he's late and taking sacks and that sort of thing. That's where it was a worst case scenario for FSU. They were not prepared with a backup quarterback in this game that was ready to play. They were not going to take the red shirt off of DeAndre Francois. They were not going to sacrifice. You know, we talked about this at before the season. Florida State, Jimbo Fisher made the decision before the year, I'm not going to sacrifice 2016, 2017, and potentially 2018 for 2015. He decided that he was going to treat this as a rebuilding year with the chance of potentially more, but that he was going to continue to build the program rather than trying to aim for success in 1 year. And this is an example of that, where they weren't going to take the shirt off of Francois, even if that meant that they might be able to win this game, because they feel like 2016, 2017, 2018 are the years. And this is a game that really, I don't want to say it didn't matter, but it was not worth pushing for in that regard. So anyway, what Florida State struggled with in this game is, and I don't have the third down passing numbers handy. On the next podcast, I'll see if I can put those together. But McGuire in the first three quarters was 10 of 24 for 201 yards, 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. If you want to know why Florida State lost this game, it's because of that. You can't go 10 of 24 for 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions and win games. Not against quality opponents. And regardless of what conference they're in, Houston is a quality opponent. We said that going in. Florida State needs to get better performance from the quarterback position. And most specifically, quarterback needs to help the offensive line. Quarterback needs to get the ball out. Most clearly, that's the one thing in Jimbo Fisher's offense that is absolutely mandatory. People talk about Fisher needs an elite quarterback. No, he just needs a quarterback who gets the ball out on time. Get the ball out on time, get it to the right guy, and you're going to be fine in Fisher's offense. It's all about timing. Get the ball out. And that's true for a lot of college offenses. Get the ball out of your hand. And what was happening is the quarterbacks were just hanging on to it, and you create pressure there. And this is actually one of the things that I was most encouraged by watching the Under Armour All-America game, watching Malik Henry, who, again, Jimbo Fisher and those around the Florida State program have extremely high hopes about Malik Henry, because they think he is a natural quarterback and he has that natural intuition, that natural anticipation that a guy like Jameis Winston, and actually you can go back to Christian Ponder, those guys have, where you just see things quickly and you get it out quickly. And, you know, in those All-Star games, that's one of the things, those All-Star games are usually kind of not all that helpful to watch in many respects, because the defensive lines just dominate the offensive lines so badly. But when you've got a kid like Henry, the thing that sticks out is he was actually able to create time for himself. He was able to help his offensive line by specifically getting the ball out of his hand before the pressure got there. And that meant taking something off the pass. That meant, you know, okay, you're going to throw a touch pass here. Even though you would normally drive this throw, you're going to throw it with a little bit more air under it and just throw it earlier and throw it to a spot, trusting that your receiver is going to be there. This is a kid that did that in an all-star setting. That's what you need. That's very encouraging to see that from a high school senior who's coming in as an early enrollee, because that's what you need in Jimbo Fisher's offense, is a guy that understands the timing and has the intuition to say, okay, he's going to be here. I know that there's going to be pressure if I wait a beat longer. So I'm just going to put it out there and I'm going to put it on time and and just trust it. And DeAndre Francois, we'll see whether or not he's able to do some of those same things. He's got a stronger arm than Henry. Physically, I think he's the more talented player in that regard. But in terms of the head, you could see what Henry's bringing to the table for this competition there. So those are some initial takeaways from this Houston game that. I wanted to finally get out there as I've been going through sort of preliminarily going through. I haven't finished grading everything, but as I've been going through the tape of what actually happened, and watching it live was one thing, because you could see how wide open the wide receivers were. You could see that these guys were not covered, and it's just get the ball out, just throw it up in the air. Just put it out there. Just put it in an area where they can compete for it, and you're gonna throw for 1,000 yards. And then going back and taking a look at the line play a little bit more closely and some of those things on the tape, it's been pretty apparent what actually happened. And the good thing is, if you're Florida State, these are areas that you can improve going into next year. Just getting healthy up front, getting the three guys who are most likely to be starting on the offensive line back next year that we're not playing in this game is going to be helpful. Getting an offensive line that is not in multiple, they started 9 different guys this year in all sorts of different configurations, getting some consistency up front, having all of those guys who've now started games competing for those 5 spots and being able to call on a real 3 deep on the offensive line is going to be critical next year. And they're going to have some depth again at the running back position. They'll have a pair of young quarterbacks that bring a lot more to the table in terms of ceiling. And this is a very quarterback friendly offense. We've talked about that before. Don't let anybody deceive you on that. Don't let anybody try to steer you otherwise. This is a quarterback friendly offense. You just have to trust it. You have to trust what you see, and you have to put the ball out on time to reap the benefits of that. But they've got all the pieces there. You could see the pieces in this game. It's just the execution was not quite there to get what they needed to against Houston. And again, we'll cover a little bit more on the Houston game in the next podcast, where I'm going to break down a little bit more player by player what I saw, a little bit more by unit in terms of grading what I saw in there and what we can expect moving forward. But these are just some initial thoughts, some initial reflections on sort of the time and a half through looking at it live and then looking at things preliminarily on tape as I go through the evaluation process. And one other thing it's worth noting is that this is a bowl game. You should never let a bowl game take outsized influence in what you're going to expect from the next year. The bowl bump is a common problem that you see from the media every year, that how a team finishes the season says a lot about, says more than anything else about where they're going to be next year. That's not really true, especially when you have 12 guys out with injuries like FSU did in this game, when you've got a young team and you've got potentially a different quarterback for the next year, a lot of different moving pieces. What you can do is you can look at the body of work, you can look at where things were, you can evaluate more clearly in that regard, and we're going to spend a good bit of time in the off season doing that on this podcast and also elsewhere where I do some coverage in terms of writing and video stuff as well. So that'll do it for us today. Before we get out of here, just a reminder again, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio. You can also, this podcast is on Facebook at the Unconquered Podcast on Facebook. You can also subscribe, again, through Podcast, your podcast manager of choice. Rate us if you're enjoying the podcast, and tell a friend. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which is going to cover actually a little bit of draft talk from in terms of Jalen Ramsey and Aguayo and a couple of Florida State players who have declared. We'll talk a little bit about that in the next podcast. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.